Exegeting Jesus' Parables by Robert C. Newman, Biblical Theological Seminary. Brief abstract. What are parables and how do they work? Well, parables are brief stories that are also analogies. Here we work through one of Jesus' parables and give a list of the various parable categories in the Gospels. What is a parable? Well, a typical dictionary, this is the Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, says a parable is a short, fictitious story that illustrates a moral attitude or religious principle. That's not bad. The story doesn't have to be fictitious, but it certainly can be. And parables illustrate or illustrative stories, and at least the ones in the Gospels typically illustrate moral attitude or religious principle. Well, we could be more specific than that. Literary definition of a parable is a simile expanded into a story. A simile is landscape looked like the moon, okay? Well, it's not the moon, okay? So you're making a comparison between the landscape you're looking at and the moon. And then the simile, if you expand that into a story in which the whole story it resembles something else, that would be the idea there. New Testament definition of a parable, we might say, New Testament doesn't actually give a definition, is that a parable is a rather broad genre of illustration, including parable as defined, either dictionary or literary definition above, allegory, in which story has lots of connections between the story and the thing you're illustrating, and sometimes they're even named to tell you what the allegory is about. Similitude, something like a parable, but very short, not even really a story. And sample parable. Sample parable is a parable that, rather than giving its illustration by analogy, does it by giving a sample of what it's talking about. So, New Testament definition, a rather broad genre of illustration, including parable as above, allegory, similitude, and sample parable, also proverb and paradox. Well, we're not going to be looking at all that broad definition, but we're going to look at things that would include the parable and the allegory and the similitude, and we may say a word or two about sample parable as well. How do parables work? Well, first of all, parables are stories typically. Similitudes aren't long enough to be stories, but stories typically. But they're brief stories. They're unified stories. They don't generally have lots of separate pieces to them. They generally got a single plot and that sort of thing. A few actors, typically two or three. Direct discourse. The speakers aren't so much described in detail as they speak in their words tell you where they're coming from. Serial development, the story moves straight through from beginning to end rather than having digressions and things of that sort. A rule of three typically shows up in parables as it does in storytelling and brief stories as well. Basically, if you've got a lot of cases, you only give three of them. I think, for instance, of the parable of the ten pounds, where the nobleman going to a far country to receive a kingdom gives a pound of silver to each of his ten servants. But when he comes back, we only get reports. The narrator, the storyteller, only gives us reports of three of those, the one whose pound gained five, the one whose pound gained two, and the one who hit his pound to the ground. Repetition. Storytelling and parables as stories typically work by repeating things. So often something said at the beginning, something said at the end will remind us of what's going on, or the same kind of terminology will be used in the way in which the nobleman praises the one who gained the 5 pounds and the one who gained the 2 pounds, something of that sort. Binary opposition, parables as simple stories, etc., don't have lots of shades of gray. They basically have black and white, the good and the bad, pictured rather clearly in that way. And other sorts of oppositions are very clear as well, like that. In stress, parables as stories typically have a punchline, we might say, at the end of the story, rather than somewhere in the middle. And they often do have a punchline of some sort, a surprise of some sort. Often, in Jesus' parables, the resolution, the story is resolved by reversal of some sort, something that turning out in a surprising way and something turning out the opposite of what one might expect if they didn't know the story. Well, that's how parables function as stories. They are usually two-level. That is, the story is typically a earthly or secular story of some sort, but the meaning of the parable is spiritual, having to do with the spiritual realities of one sort, having to do with the kingdom of heaven, something of that sort. So usually two-level. Not all parables are two-level. We'll come back and look at sample parables in a bit here, and they don't fall in that category. Further on how parables work, we can mention the work of John W. Sider in his book Interpreting the Parables, A Hermeneutical Guide to Their Meaning. This is the best book I've seen out on how parables function. He says, Sider says, that parables are analogies. That is, they're drawing a comparison between two different realms, if you like. It's a verbal comparison rather than a pictorial comparison. But as Jesus' stories and the stories of good storytellers are word pictures, there's very much pictorial in them as well. And the technical terminology is that what the story is about on its ultimate level, the heavenly meaning, we might say, is called the tenor of the parable, using one of two rather diverse meanings of the word tenor in English. The tenor is the high part that a male musician, male singer would sing, but tenor can also refer to the content of something. What was the tenor of so-and-so's remarks? What was the basic point he was making? The tenor is the heavenly meaning, and the vehicle, the thing that carries the tenor, is the earthly story. We use vehicle regularly to represent like an automobile or a wagon or a bicycle or something that carries a person, etc. And if you're into paint and such, you're aware that the term vehicle is used for the solvent in which the tint that the paint carries, the color that the paint has, is carried by a vehicle, whether that vehicle be water in watercolors or whether it be latex and latex paints or oil and oil paints, etc. Well, here, you're getting that kind of a use here. The earthly story is carrying the heavenly meaning by means of analogies. So a parable will have a tenor of what it's kind of really about, the vehicle, the earthly story that's carrying this, and then the points of resemblance between the earthly situation, which the story is telling, and the heavenly meaning. And there was a long time when people claimed that parables had only one point of resemblance, ignoring the evidence we already had from rabbinic parables that they often had more than one point of resemblance, and ignoring explicit statements of the Gospels. I hope that New Testament scholarship has now moved away from that. Rather, yes, there's a danger in over-allegorizing parables, but there's a serious danger in missing multiple points of resemblance if one is clamped onto the idea there's only one. We give you an analogy that Shakespeare uses in one of his plays that will give you a bit of an idea. here it is. As flies to wanton boys are we to the gods. They kill us for their sport. A rather skeptical statement made by one of the actors, one of the characters in one of Shakespeare's plays. The tenor, what's the point of this analogy, is the relationship of the gods to humans. The character is a pagan of some sort, and so has the kind of pagan view of gods, that the gods are capricious and unreliable and various things of that sort. The tenor is how certain kinds of boys, wanton boys, reckless boys, if you like, relate to flies. As flies to wanton boys are we to the gods. They kill us for their sport. The point of resemblance is how mistreated, the way in which wanton boys mistreat flies, pulling off their wings or things of that sort, is the way in which the gods, according to this character, treat humans. They kill us for their sport. Well, that's an analogy and shows you somewhat how analogies work. And what we might say is that a parable is an analogy or a series of analogies expanded into a story. One can diagram the analogy, and this is how how it's done by Sider. He makes an equation in which we have the tenor side of the analogy on one side of the equation. We are to the gods. That's what the colon represents there. We are to the gods, as flies are to wanton boys. And then at the bottom, he puts the point or points of resemblance, and Sider's method is to put the label point of resemblance underneath the point, points, and here's the point with respect to how they mistreat us, so that the point of resemblance can be used on either side. They, the gods, mistreat us, or flies the wanton boys mistreat the flies, if you like. Example from Jesus' parables. Think of the parable of the wheat and weeds, which is narrated for us by Jesus in Matthew 13, verses 24 to 30, and then very quickly after that, in verses 36 through 43, it's explained by Jesus. The story, the tenor, the vehicle, is that a man sows good seed in his field, wheat, let's presume. And then at night, his enemy comes along and sows weed seed, presumably some kind of a grass that will look a fair bit like the wheat when it comes up. When the situation is later discovered by the owner's slaves, presumably after the grass of both kinds has grown up and now it's begun to put on its seeds, and they can see that some of the seeds aren't wheat seeds, the slaves want to remedy the situation right away. They want to pull up the weeds. The owner says, no, don't do that. That might pull up some of the good weeds and wheat as well. Let's wait until the harvest. Well, that's the story. The tenor, we're told on this parable, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. So the tenor is about the kingdom of heaven. There's an analogy between this story about an enemy trying to get back at this landowner by messing up his crop. There's an analogy to that in regard to the matters of the kingdom of heaven. The vehicle is the story we've just sketched for you. And then we can ask ourselves, well, what are the points of resemblance? And in my PowerPoint here, I just said several, but let's kind of think what they might be. Well, I already kind of stated one of them. In the vehicle, the enemy wants to get back at the owner. And if we see the owner as God, the enemy is Satan, which we have good warrant for in the interpretation of the parable. Verse 37, Jesus said, the one who sowed the good seed, the owner, is the Son of Man. And the weeds, the enemy who sows the weeds is the devil. Okay, so there we get to basically what we get is that the devil is the enemy of the Son of Man, of Jesus. And he wants to get back at Jesus, and he wants to mess up the harvest, if you like. So we're carrying those from a physical harvest over into something relating to the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven resembles a situation of growing plants and then having a harvest later. In fact, Jesus has just sketched that sort of thing earlier in his parable of the sower. So we're running somewhat along those lines. The difference between the two is that the seeds in the first parable of sower represent the word of the kingdom, message of the kingdom, whereas here the seeds represent people. The seeds represent the sons of the kingdom is the good seed, and the sons of the evil one is the good seed, bad seed. So points of resemblance. There's a resemblance between the tenor and the story with respect to the enmity between the original sower and the second sower, between the Son of Man and the devil. There's a point of resemblance between the enemy wanting to mess up the harvest of the other one, and so we see that point of resemblance there. Some others, surely something is going on with the slaves wanting to remedy the situation by ripping up the weeds, and we might say, well, let's see, the slaves probably represent in some way perhaps leaders among the followers of Jesus who would like to solve this problem by getting rid of all of the fake Christians, we might say. And basically, Jesus forbids that. He doesn't forbid the church discipline, but we shouldn't expect too much of church discipline because it may wind up that the wrong people are disciplined, etc. And that's happened again and again in church controversies, etc., that the people who are really standing for the truth may wind up being disciplined as though they're the troublemakers, when in fact it's someone else that is, okay? So the situation won't really be remedied until the harvest. And then Jesus says the angels will separate the two kinds of plants, the real believers from the fake believers, etc. So we can see several points of resemblance there in this particular parable. Well, depending on how long the parable is and how complicated it is, there may be a number of points of resemblance, or there might be as few as one, but we're to try and be on the lookout for them. We want to understand the story, the vehicle, as best we can before we start jumping into trying to figure out how the tenor works. We want to take all the hints that Jesus gives us. Here in this particular case, he gives us a rather detailed explanation in verses 36 through 43 that doesn't solve all our problems, all our questions, but certainly gives us a good deal of information. He does the same with the parable of the sower. But for instance, in the four, what we might call middle parables, in the seven parables of the kingdom, the parables of we'll get there in a minute. The parables of the mustard seed and the leaven, the parables of the hidden treasure and the pearl of great price, no interpretation is given, and so we have to work with the context and such we've got to try and work those out. I do that in another one of my PowerPoint talks, The Parables of the Kingdom, if you want to have a look at that, and it'll give you a more detailed walkthrough on how to do something of these sorts of things. We can organize the parables in the Gospels, particularly the story parables and similitudes, the parables that work with this heavenly story, earthly meaning sort of idea, into topics. And I suggest that there are a large number of Christological parables, some parables of lost and found, some parables of forgiveness and mercy, some parables of prayer, parables of transformation, parables of stewardship, parables of invitation and rejection, parables of the second coming, parables of the warning and judgment, parables of the kingdom. And then here I list two more categories in which I change the color of the heading from the white there to kind of a lavender. Illustrative or example parables and active parables. I do that because these two categories are rather different than the others. Illustrative parables are not earthly stories with heavenly meanings. They are already samples of the particular thing that Jesus is speaking about, whether it be resembling someone who is doing the right sort of thing or trying to avoid that sort of picture as well. A nice example of this is the parable of the Good Samaritan. The parable of the Good Samaritan, we're looking at somebody who is illustrating what it means to be a good neighbor to someone else. He does not consider that he's only a good neighbor to fellow Jews. He should be a good neighbor to anyone he comes across who is in need of his help. And so the Samaritan is one who helps out this person who is of a different ethnic religious group than he is. The Samaritan helps the Jew, and rather surprise in the story, since two good Jews, a priest and a Levite, had gone by and did not help the fellow, etc. It's a sample of what it means to be one's neighbor. There are about six of these kind of parables in the Gospel of Luke, and they basically give you a sample of what they're talking about. The parable of the rich fool would be another one here. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus is a third one of these. So those are illustrative or example parables. And they work by what we call, instead of analogy, they work by a part of the whole. Just as this person who was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho helped this person who had been beaten up and left for dead by thieves, so we, whether or not we ever travel that road or not, so that's part of the generalization, if you like, should be ready to help people in trouble. And that generalizes beyond just travel, like stopping to help someone whose car is broken down along the road, to helping other people who are in difficulties as well. We show our neighborliness by doing that sort of thing, if you like. The last example I give are acted parables, and these do come back to earthly story with heavenly meaning, except it's not a story. It's an acted out thing, what we might think of as a mime, or as an actor acting in a play. So a person does something that seems unusual, and that unusual action is intended to teach a lesson. We have a number of these in the Old Testament. We have the example where the prophet Jeremiah buys a new clay pot and takes it with him as he goes outside the city of Jerusalem to speak to a group. And as he's telling them of the judgments that's going to come on Jerusalem, he throws the pot down and it smashes into pieces. And he says, that's what's going to happen to Jerusalem. We have a more elaborate one, if you like, in the whole marriage relationship between the prophet Hosea and his wife Gomer, in which Hosea represents God and Gomer represents the people of Israel. And Gomer's unfaithfulness reflects the unfaithfulness of the people of Israel. And Hosea's willingness to go and find Gomer and bring her back represents God's redemptive concern for Israel, if you like. Those are Old Testament acted parables. Aren't there any acted parables in the New Testament? Yes, I think there are. A number of commentators agree on two of them at least, and that would be Jesus' cleansing of the temple when he uses the whip to drive out the money changers and the animals in the temple. We see a picture, I think, of God's attitude towards the way the nation Israel is behaving, and he is going to drive them out, as he will do in just a generation after Jesus' ministry, with the destruction of Jerusalem and the scattering of Israel, if you like. The other one is the cursing of the fig tree, which has actually a very similar point. This fig tree has leaves on it, which for a fig tree in Israel, that would imply that it has produced a crop of figs already. And Jesus goes to look for the figs and doesn't find any, etc. And again, suggesting that his Old Testament people have not been fruitful as they should have been and are going to be cursed, etc. Both of these being judgmental of Israel, Christians have a tendency perhaps to look down their noses at, but the same sort of parables can be generalized to what God will do with professing Christians who do not live like they really are Christians. I think of the warnings that Jesus gives to the seven churches in Revelation. If you don't repent, I'll come and remove your lampstand, etc. All in that category. Are there any other acted parables of Jesus? Well, a number of others have been suggested, and we're perhaps less certain whether they are or not. Probably Jesus washing the feet of the disciples at the Last Supper would fall in this category as well. Very probably when Jesus puts clay on the eyes of the blind man and then tells him to go wash it, we're getting some kind of an acted parable as well. Well, it might be nice to do a PowerPoint talk on acted parables sometime, but haven't been done yet, so we'll have to let that ride. Well, that's the end of our quick talk here. Basically just say, think through these things. Think through how parables function as stories and look at the features of the stories to make them brief and vivid, and then how the parables function as analogies to help you understand some spiritual situation by seeing how the story functions and then carrying that over to the spiritual reality. So let's begin to make the parables come alive for our audiences. This was originally given for seminary students, but let's make the parables come alive for ourselves as well as we read the parables and study the parables.